Talk New York sports on the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 205. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. Got you for another 3 hours. Talking a lot of baseball. I did open with the Knicks, and I want to get back to them just for a second because this was the opening of a very promising, I mean, this is as hyped up as a Knicks season as we've had in a long time. And I know we're in the middle of the World Series and the basketball season last 81 games, and we got plenty of 82 games. We got plenty of time to get to them. But this was opening night in Boston as the Celtics were getting their ring and the first time to get a look at this new look Knicks team. Because, yeah, I mean, a lot of the reasons that we're so excited about this Knicks team are still there. Obviously, the team's a lot different. Bridges is there. Towns is there. Said goodbye to Julius Randle. Said goodbye to the Big Ragu. I don't think either of them are. I mean, I guess Randle's okay with leaving. Clearly, DiVincenzo was not so happy about leaving. But as we headed into this season with as much optimism and as much excitement for the prospects of the Knicks bringing a championship or getting back to an NBA Finals legitimately on the table and going and starting the season right up against the defending champion Boston Celtics, it was a good early litmus test. Now, we all thought that with a new starting five comes growing pains on some level. And you knew that there would be a little bit of feeling out and getting familiar with each other. But I don't think we expected the absolute beating that the Knicks took last night. And we didn't expect Bridges to look as terrible as he did to start this game. Not only was he missing shots, but ugly looking shots. Like, it looked like he had a little bit of a hitch at the top of his jump shot. Like, it just, and we've seen him go cold before. He had a long stretch, couple week stretch with the Nets last year where offensively he was just off. He did find it in the second half. He ends up shooting 7-for-13. But it just looked ugly to start the game. And the other thing was, this is supposed to be, and one of their strengths is the perimeter defense. And the Celtics just absolutely fired away and tied the record for most three-pointers made in the game with 29 threes. They end up 29-for-61, which is only a 47% clip. Only a 47% clip. But that's because the end of the game, the last 4 or 5 minutes, is literally them chucking up threes to see if they can break the record. And they missed a ton at the end of this game. But they started this game putting everything in. And the Knicks just got blown out in the first half. And, you know, ultimately, you saw some good things, right? You saw, like I said, Bridges kind of find it. Towns early on hit a couple of shots. He's 5-for-9 in this game. McBride really played well in this game, 8-for-10. So the Knicks didn't play awful. They scored 109 points. They gave up 132. But with Anunoby and with Bridges, and even Hart to an extent, you know, this team is supposed to be and was last year for a lot. I mean, OG Anunoby is arguably the premier perimeter defender in the sport. And they just had no answers for this Celtic team that was just hitting everything. I mean, Tatum is 8-for-11 from three-point land. Hartford, 3-for-5. Holiday, 4-for-6. Brown, 5-for-9. I mean, they just absolutely, I mean, then you get the Pritchards of the world who went 1-for-9 trying to break this record at the end of the game. But this Knicks team had a chance, right, to show up and make a statement to this Celtic team that we're here, right? As cliche as that's become now. But a chance to say, hey, look, we are the team that you have to worry about in this Eastern Conference. It's not the Pacers. It's not Cleveland. It's not anybody else but us. We are the team that you are going to have to get past if you want to get back to an NBA Finals. We've established, we brought in the star Towns. Right, we're going to be a better offensive team. We're going to be able maybe to combat your size a little bit. And instead, they were blown out of the building in the first half. And the rest is kind of irrelevant what happened. And now it's only one game, and you certainly don't get hung up on it. It doesn't mean that the Knicks are a bad team or the Knicks can't contend with the Boston Celtics, but what it means right now is they're going to have to find themselves. And although it's a long season, it comes upon you quickly. And if they're going to want to immediately contend, if they're going to want to be at the top of the standings, it's going to, you know, you have to figure this out. And you cannot allow anybody, I don't care if it's the Celtics, I don't care if it's the Warriors, I don't care who it is, you can't allow anyone to just blow you out of the building hitting three after three after three. And, you know, a lot of them weren't, it's not like they're all contested three-pointers. They did not do a great job fighting through screens. They did not do a great job getting their hands in the face. Like, they just did not play great perimeter defense in this game, and it's supposed to be a strength of theirs. So night one of the New York Knicks was really just a rough night, a night where you saw Bridges really struggle offensively. You saw a defense that just wasn't up to task. You saw 22 points out of Brunson looking kind of, you know, okay. You saw a team defensively that wasn't ready to match the intensity of the Boston Celtics to start this game. They came out like the team looking to prove a point. They came out like the team looking to justify a championship and make a statement about being a team that could go back-to-back. The Knicks did not come out as the team looking to be the thorn in their side. The Knicks did not come out with the intensity of a team trying to show that they are right there with the Celtics. That was Boston tonight. Now, it's one game. I still have a lot of faith in this team. But for what was supposed to be, and what is supposed to be, an extremely promising season, and a team that we hope to fall in love with the way we did this team last year, for the first night, kind of ugly. And for the first night, there's no doubt who the better team was, and there's no doubt who's chasing who. 888-808-1019. We'll get to you. We'll get back to your baseball calls as well as the Yankees are in the World Series. It's going to be a talking point, especially on this show. We'll get to the matchups in a little. We've talked about the bullpen. We could talk about the offense. We could talk about the starting pitching and some of the different elements to this. And plus, there's definitely a conversation to be had about these two managers who are much maligned. A lot of people don't, you know, Dave Roberts has not been, despite the success and despite how many times he's now been to the World Series, it's been done with a Dodgers team that spends a ton of money. They went out this offseason and spent $1 billion. Dave Roberts is not viewed as one of the best managers in baseball, despite getting back to this series time and time again, and certainly Aaron Boone has his detractors. So it's going to be fascinating who comes out on top in this series. That's an interesting matchup and a talking point. And then obviously the other talking point that happened last night, the unfortunate passing of Dodger great Fernando Valenzuela, who died last night, I guess, at the age of 63, far too young. I don't know the circumstances just yet, but I mean, someone who took Major League Baseball by storm in 1981, ironically, the same year as the last time that the Dodgers and the Yankees met in the World Series, as the Dodgers beat the Yankees after losing to them in 77 and 78, finally got them in 81 with the help of Fernando Valenzuela, who won Rookie of the Year as well as the Cy Young Award winner, was, you know, captivated all of baseball. And, you know, obviously of Mexican descent, really arguably the greatest baseball player ever from Mexico, and a beloved figure there, a great pitcher, a Dodger legend, and someone who I expected, you know, not knowing his health, and I'm not sure what his health was, but I expected someone who would be part of the festivities that are bound to happen between these two franchises. I mean, that's the last time they met in the World Series. You would expect members of those teams to be a part of this. You know, we saw plenty of George Brett in the rivalry with the Royals and the Yankees, so I could imagine Major League Baseball that's looking to play up this Yankee-Dodger matchup. I thought we would see Fernando Valenzuela, and unfortunately we won't. And it's a sad story. It's just another element to this matchup, another storyline, as I'm sure now they're going to be honoring him in some way. I'm sure the Dodgers will be wearing his number on their jersey. I'm sure there'll be a lot said about the great Fernando Valenzuela, and particularly his 81 season and Fernando Mania. So a lot of storylines around this World Series, no doubt. Steve in Rockland, what's up, Steve?
Hey, you know, he was also the Spanish-speaking analyst for the radio broadcast And he just all of a sudden, you know, without any announcement, all of a sudden he wasn't there anymore. So something was going on with
him.
Yeah,
is that true? Was he part of the broadcast this year?
Indeed he was. Okay. Indeed he was. So something was going on there, and it was private, and I think they did a good job. Anyway, Chris, let me ask you something. Let me take a little bit of a different view without putting any numbers into this Juan Soto thing.
Okay.
As a Yankee fan, how would you feel if the Yankees devoted all of the major resources to bring back Soto and very little else? How's that for a question?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be
fine with that.
Yes, fine with it. 100%. I'm with it. You got to bring back Juan Soto.
Fine.
You have to bring back Juan Soto.
Yeah.
And you're going to have youth around it. You're going to play Jason Dominguez. He's going to be a starting outfielder. Anthony Volpe is your starting second baseman. Shortstop, obviously. You're going to give a chance for guys like Oswald Peraza to be your starting second baseman. They have other guys down there who could be. Maybe Ben Rice gets a chance to be your first baseman. You're going to have to inject youth as well as the stars. The bullpen, they've done an excellent job of building the bullpen out of no names. You need the stars in the middle of this lineup. You need guys like Juan Soto. I don't care what it costs. I don't care how much little else they'll have to put into the team around him. If you give me Judge, Stanton, Soto, Cole, Rodon, like those are the guys you've invested the money in, so be it.
And then you're going to build around it. You know what? Apparently, my National League, a friend of mine who's a big National League guy, told me that Chisholm's best position is second base.
Definitely. I mean, I think he's going to be one of the infielders. He's under contract next year. He's either going to be at third base or second base, whatever, which it doesn't really matter because it could be second base, no doubt. I think they like him at third, and I think they have other options in the minors where they project better at second. I think they have more answers in the farm system at second than they do at third. But yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they get a cheap veteran at third base and move him over to second, or, you know, amazingly enough, give DJ LeMahieu a chance. And, you know, his range is probably shortened up where you'd probably rather see him at third, even though offensively he doesn't profile as a third baseman at all. And who knows what he's going to be. But there's a chance that he could still be in the infield. He's under contract next year. So Oswaldo Cabrera could be part of the infield situation. Like, that's it. You're going to have... If you re-sign Juan Soto, this is what very likely could be the team, right? I'm going to give it to you right now because they're not going to have a lot of money to go elsewhere in free agency, and I think you lose Gleyber Torres. I do. I think you lose, and you have to be okay with that. You just have to be. As great as he's been in this postseason, you just have to be. But the team is going to be Austin Wells at catcher, Ben Rice or a cheap option at first base, or maybe Anthony Rizzo I think he's got a contract, he's got an option. They could opt out of the contract and sign him to even less money if he's willing to do that. But it's going to be a cheap option at first, either Ben Rice or a cheap option at first. You're going to have probably Oswald Peraza at second. You're going to have Anthony Volpe at short. You're going to have Jazz Chisholm at third. You're going to have Juan Soto in left. You're going to have Dominguez in center. And you're going to have Judge in right. That's going to be your team. It's going to be the stars, and it's going to be youth. And they, right now, you feel really good about Wells and the season he just had. Right now, you feel really good about Volpe and the way he's playing in the postseason. You know, Jason Dominguez is an unproven commodity, but what he showed us and the ability he has, you feel pretty good about that out in center field. And the bullpen will be guys like, you know, you're going to have Weaver as your closer who's not making any money. You're going to have guys like that. That's going to be the team next year. But I'm not focused on the team next year. Major Smith out in East Orange. What's up, Major Smith? Hello, Major. Foxtrot Bravo. Major, you there? Nope. Let's go to Don in Fort Lee. What's up, Don?
Not much. How you doing, Big Mac?
I'm doing well, Don. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm a big Giant fan. I was a little disappointed watching Saquon run all over him. I just think for a couple million extra dollars, I kind of agree with Belichick on that. But
I really don't, but I get you. I mean, we've seen him. We've seen him on that side of the rivalry. How many times have they beaten the Eagles?
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen the likes of Boston Scott run up the score on me. So it really doesn't matter that Saquon Barkley did it. It doesn't bother me at all.
Right. Just getting to the Yankees, the Dodgers are a really, really, really good team. If you look at what they did this season, they were the mark of consistency month to month. They were just, you know, the last 4 months of the season, they were 21 games over 500. The Yankees were 5 games over 500. Against the American League this year, against the American League, the Dodgers were 30-16. The Yankees were 500 against the National League. And I just think if you look at the National League is a little better. The better teams are a little better, I think, than the American League these days.
Yeah.
They're a little more battle-tested. And they were relentless against the Mets. I mean, they outscored the Mets 37-7 in the 4 games that they won. They were absolutely relentless.
Yeah.
So I just see the Yankees with a very difficult matchup.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think you could argue. I understand what you're saying. I think you can argue that the Yankees in the postseason here, especially in the CS Championship Series, were more battle-tested. I know the team, I'm not saying Cleveland's as good as the Mets necessarily, but they were in it. They were playing tight games in the 7th, 8th, 9th inning. They needed big hits. They had these tightly contested big moments for the bullpen to come in. Like you just said, the Dodgers didn't play any tight games. The Dodgers blew out the Mets, and the Mets blew out the Dodgers. They didn't have any real pressures on in the 7th, 8th inning. They didn't have any real, we got to get these outs. Like, their offense definitely scored a ton of runs, no doubt, and broke games open, and they're to be commended for that and certainly not penalized for it. But at the same time, nobody had to have that Soto at-bat in the 10th inning against one of the best relievers in baseball, game tied, and you know you could lose the game if you don't score there. Like you didn't have to have a 2-run home run from Aaron Judge against the best closer in baseball just to save your bacon in the 8th inning. Like they didn't have to do any of that. The Yankees had to pull it out of the fire on several occasions. They just absolutely dominated the Mets in the games they won.
Right, that's absolutely true. But if to get Soto back, I think he'd have to come back at a discount because I just think he's going to get bigger offers than the Yankees would be able to afford to give him with the rest of the payroll.
I mean, again, you want to call it a discount? I can't argue with that word. I'm kind of quibbling with you and parsing words with you. I think there's a number in Juan Soto's head that he has to have, right? I think that, let's just call it $600 million, $650 million, whatever it is. I think whatever that number is that Juan Soto is saying I have to have, the Yankees will go there. And if that's enough for Juan Soto, if in his mind he thinks that's fair value, that's what he wants. He wants to approach how much money in real terms because of the sending the money down the line with Ohtani. The contract's hard to read. It's not really $700 million with all the deferrals. But whatever he wants, I think the Yankees will give him. But
right.
If he just wants to play everybody against each other and see who's the final biggest number and he wants that, then yes, I agree with you. They will be outbid by the Mets. But I don't think and if you want to call that a discount by nature of it, I suppose. But I mean, if the Mets are willing to go to a crazy high number and they get into a bidding war and the Yankees go, okay, we'll go 625 and Soto and obviously his agent Scott Boras go to the Mets and Steve Cohen and say, well, the Yankees are at 625, where are you? All right, 650. All right, and then you go back to the Yankees. All right, the Mets are at 650. And they play that game, the Mets will win it. I don't think there's any doubt in that. The Mets will win it. But if Juan Soto says, look, if they pay me $46 million a year for 15 years, and the number is $700 million over 15 years, or $650 over 15 years, 14 years, and the Yankees are willing to give me that, that's what I want. That sets up me as the highest paid player in baseball. That sets me up with the biggest contract. You can argue that's more money, even though Ohtani makes $700 million, so much of it is deferred. That technically would probably still be a bigger contract than Ohtani got. If that's what he wants, and the Yankees will say yes to that, and he's happy to be a Yankee, I don't know why that situation is so unplausible. I don't know why people view that as something that's just, hey, look, that doesn't make any sense. He's not going to turn down any money from the Mets. I don't know why that doesn't make sense to people. He has a number in his mind. He wants to set a certain amount of goals, wants more money than Ohtani, wants bigger overall number than Ohtani, wants this over Ohtani, wants this kind of contract, wants this, that, and the other. That's what I want. Ask the Yankees if they'll do it. They say yes. Okay, I'm a Yankee. I don't know why that's so hard to fathom. Is it the most likely of situations? I don't know, but it's certainly possible. But we talk about it like it's just strictly, it's going to be a bidding war, and the Yankees are going to lose it. So you better win a championship now. I mean, that's pretty much the thought process. And I don't know why it is. We have seen the Judge, and I know Judge was a homegrown Yankee. I get that. And I know Soto turned down $400 million, you know, a couple of years ago with the team that drafted him and everything. That contract is a pittance to what he's going to get now. And he's been getting, he got $30 million this year. Like, it's not like he's not been getting paid in the meantime. He's getting paid just as much as that contract would have paid him almost per year. He turned down $400 million, but he turned it down over 12 or 13 years. He's going to blow that contract out of the water. And I also heard something that was interesting today that I thought of previously with Soto's contract. I don't think he would do it, but is there a chance that only he's going to be 26 next year? If he were to sign a five-year contract at outrageous money per, like say 5 for $50, 5 for $55, and then just say, you know what, I believe in myself, I believe how good I am, and I'll hit the free agent market when most other people hit the free agent market again at 31 and sign another big contract. The money's only going up. They're only giving bigger and bigger contracts every single year. All right, I might not get a 15-year contract at that point, but I'll sign an 8-year deal worth a lot more money than I'm going to get the last 8 years of a big contract. That's plausible. It also opens him up to the, and people go, well, why not just sign it once in a big year contract? Like, it also doesn't lock him into a 15-year deal. Like, I know you could put outs and opt-out clauses in the contract, and I think there probably would be, because who would want to, without question, be locked into 15 years? Even with the high number. Like, things change. You might grow a bitterness towards the organization or want out, and you're locked into a contract. If he signs a 5-year deal, big-time money, hit free agency again at 31, it's not correct. You could sign another 8-9-year deal at that point. But I don't think that would happen, but it's plausible. But my only point with this is, like, one, I really don't know why we have to talk about it right now. And two, while yes, I don't think there's any doubt the Yankees won't win a bidding war, I don't know why we just assume that Juan Soto wants one, needs one, and will go to whoever wins it. That's not what happened with Judge. We've seen that's not what happened with Trey Turner. Like, we have seen guys turn down more money to go where they want. When it's that much money, it's not implausible. But for whatever reason, Soto has been deemed, I don't want to call it greedy, but he's been deemed as, it's all about the money, that's it. I don't care about where it is. Hell, you know, if the White Sox offered him $700 million, he'd be in Chicago. Like, why? I don't know why we all assume that. Because he turned down a big contract? Because he's going to get an enormous amount of money and would warrant a bidding war and is going to get one? Like, I don't know why we just assume that he's going to be about every penny no matter what else, and nothing else is being brought into consideration. He's going to want to get paid, no doubt, and he's going to want what he wants. And I think the Yankees will go there. They just won't continually battle against Steve Cohen when they know they can't win. I think we all agree with that.
Start some trouble and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 2:35. McMonagle here with you. I'm just seeing now there was another basketball game played last night. Lakers took down the Timberwolves 110-103. And we saw for the first time LeBron James and Bronny James enter the game at the same time. Bronny played 3 minutes in this game. And just watching it, there's a clip of them on the bench next to each other. And Bronny's like, got his head down, just thinking or whatever. I don't know, getting ready to play the game. And LeBron's just like, talking to him as a dad would. He's like, hey, play, bring the right intensity, but play free. Play loose. Don't be afraid to make mistakes, but be smart out there. Like, and it's just like so, like, I remember my dad. And I remember just like practicing for the driving test and the torture that was. And to be in the car with him and like, and then to talk about games after games were played and go over moments of, you know, my football games, my baseball games. You know, one of the worst moments of my life, now that I look back on it, one of the, my biggest regrets was I yelled at him at a baseball game. I forget what it was. It was like a tournament baseball game, an all-star baseball game, and I didn't have a great game. I struck out maybe a couple times or something. And he kept saying the same thing to me, and I don't remember what it was exactly. You know, lay off the high ones, kid. No, that was Gina Davis. I always get them confused. But he was saying something to me. And he was in the stands with the rest of the fans and dads and moms, pretty much. And I just turned to him. I said, enough out of you. I'll never forget it. He didn't talk to me for like a month. He was very upset with me. But, you know, in that moment, it was just too much. I was frustrated with myself, and he just kept saying the same thing, and I just, enough out of you. And it makes me, like, when I think about this, like, can you imagine? I know it's the NBA, and I know in many ways he's only there because his father's there. But still, having to, like, literally sit next to your dad, and he happens to be one of the greatest players of all time, and he's going to pick apart your game. Like, I just... And he's going to be there and like, talk about it. And you know you're going to have to do it with him there. Like, and let's be, he's not Ken Griffey Jr. It's one thing when you're Ken Griffey, right? And you got to play with your dad, but you know who you are and you know why you're there. Like, this is different. And to have, like, your dad there and, like, okay, now, play loose, but don't make mistakes. Play loose, but be smart. Don't worry about mistakes, but... think out there. Like, it was like contradictory and like just, oh, so typical. Like, I got it, Dad. Thanks. I know they're grown men and I know it's the NBA, but that would be tough. Be tough for me. It'd be tough to be the dad, too. Because, you know, you get frustrated by when they make mistakes or don't do what you think they should do. Like, it's very difficult. But beyond who gives a crap about the Lakers or whatever, I just find it fascinating, you know, both being a father and a son trying to understand that dynamic and how different it is than even Ken Griffey, because, like, you know, they're inside, it's a different game. Baseball is so individualized, even in a team concept. It's like, you know, he's not in the batter's box with you. He's not standing right next to you in center field. Like, they're walking on the court the same time. They're working together. They're running an offense. They're whatever. You know, it's different. Very fascinating. Very fascinating. And we got our first glimpse of it last night. That's enough out of you. Oh, he was so mad at me. I remember I came home like 2 weeks later and he was like cleaning the pool and I was like, hey, Dad. And he just like looked at me and didn't say anything. I was like, you're still mad at me? Don't embarrass your father in front of Scott Hoseman's dad. You don't do it. Everybody knows that. Joe in the Bronx. What's up, Joe?
Hey, C-Mac. Great show as always, man.
Thank you, buddy.
It's funny. It's funny you're touching on dads and everything. Like, you know, my own son, I spoke to a while ago. You know, he was in, actually, 2 years ago, I spoke to him. He was in Kuwait. He was deployed.
Oh, but, well, that's great. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you. And I remember you made a big, and I appreciate you so much for that. But, C-Mac, I remember the 81 season.
Yeah.
I was 11 years old. And this Fernando Mania thing. Now, my parents were going through a divorce. At the time, I mean, this fits in, believe me. But okay. My dad would always he'd bring me actually to Fernando was the big thing, Fernando Mania.
Sure.
And I don't remember the date, but 81. I remember he did pitch a shutout against the Mets, and there was one usher. His name was Gus, and Gus Gate D. I don't know how I remember that, but My dad used to try to buy box seats at the time. The Mets stunk. I mean, they were bad. And this guy, you know, just get up a tier or whatever. And you know, we'd have to hit him up for $20 or whatever.
Right.
And my dad, we'd get good seats. But I didn't realize how young Fernando was at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, I was 11, so he died at 63. I'm 54 now.
Yeah.
And I just want to give a tribute to him and his family, man. May he rest in peace. And we all miss our dad, C-Mac.
Yeah, no, we do. We do. We certainly do. Mike in Palm Coast of Florida. Mike, what's going on, Mike? How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Chris? I think the last thing you said about Soto is probably the more likely if he wants that huge money, sign a short-term deal, and then at 30, sign like a 10-year deal. Because, you know, there's no comparison. You said you don't understand why. The comparison to Ohtani is a unicorn.
Yeah.
What he brings to the Dodgers is a huge potential of Japanese companies. I read this in the LA Times. Huge potential for Japanese companies to advertise with the Dodgers and for sponsorships with the Dodgers and also the team, the merchandise and television rights in Japan. Soto doesn't bring any of that and never will.
Well, I mean, one thing. I mean, I think there is, and for, you know, the East Coast, and that's part of the reason he wants to sign the East Coast, to be close to his family and, you know, with Dominican descent. But
agreeable.
I think there's some of that, but I never compared them and their contracts necessarily. I'm saying I'm talking about.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to say one last thing. The LA Times already said the Dodgers have already now secured more money than his contract, and it's going to just keep growing.
I agree, and I think it was 13 million people watched Game 5 or 6. Of the NLCS in Japan. I mean, wait until the World Series numbers. There's no doubt. And I never said anything about Ohtani and what's the difference between them. I'm talking about taking the biggest dollar necessarily. And what we heard was is that maybe Toronto offered the same contract or bigger money. Like, I understand exactly why Ohtani got the contract he got. I never once questioned why he got the contract he got. I mean, after the deferrals and you find out, I mean, he's trying to benefit from avoiding the tax rate of California, and they're deferring the money, and it's going to end up being less than $700 million in actual dollars, I suppose. But, yeah, I understand exactly why I got that contract. You're 100% right. You're 100% right. He brings in a ton of money. There's no doubt. So I don't really know why. I don't really remember making it seem like it was. I don't understand the difference in the contracts between Soto and Ohtani. Soto's going to make almost as much or more because of his age and because of his value to a team at his age. He's a Hall of Fame player already. Watch, look what he's doing already. Hopefully, he's about to become a 2-time World Series champion. He's 26. Guys, he's an unbelievable Hall of Fame player. He's turning 26 on Friday, game one of the World Series. He turns 26. He's so young. That's why he's going to make big money. If he were 30, he wouldn't make big money. I mean, he would make big money. He wouldn't make the same amount of money. He wouldn't get the amount of years he's going to get now. But the only thing I ever said I don't understand the difference. I don't understand the difference why Trey Turner can turn down less money to go to Philadelphia where he wanted to go, and Aaron Judge can turn down more money. Rather, I'm sorry, Trey Turner can turn down more money to go to Philadelphia. And Aaron Judge can turn down the same contract or more in San Francisco and more money in San Diego to stay with the Yankees. But the idea of Juan Soto turning down more money to stay with the Yankees is just preposterous. It's naive. It's stupid. Why would you possibly think Juan Soto would turn down a dollar to play with the Yankees? I don't know, because he likes it here. because he might just win a championship, and he gets the he had his best year hitting behind, or excuse me, in front of the of Aaron Judge, and maybe he sees that as a prosperous duo for his numbers and his baseball game, and he likes playing with Judge, and he likes being a Yankee, and so that when you're getting up in the $500, $600 million range, $30 million isn't that big a deal? Maybe. I mean, is that crazy? People act like that's naive. I don't think that's naive. I really don't. I agree with half the story. The first half is the Mets are going to outbid everybody. I agree with that story. The second half is that means he's going to be a Met. I don't agree with that part of it. Dan in Manhattan. What's up, Dan?
Chris.
Yes, sir.
I think you do know why. Scott Boras. Why would he? How many clients of Scott Boras have turned down more money? I don't know if he's Trey Turner's agent, but he's definitely not Judge's.
Right.
I don't know the number. I've never heard. I know he had some issues with Jordan Montgomery and one other prominent player that
He had a miserable offseason. He had a miserable offseason. He had Blake Snell ended up signing a contract.
Right.
Montgomery ended up signing a much lesser contract. Clay Bellinger ended up signing a much lesser contract. Cody Bellinger, I forget which one. I'm losing it. Bellinger ended up signing a lesser contract. Like he had a Matt Chapman ended up signing a lesser contract. He had like a miserable year. So yeah, there's no doubt he wants to he knows what he's got in Juan Soto. There's no doubt. But I mean, I'm sorry. Juan Soto is still running the show.
I agree. I agree with you. I like the 5 year. In fact, I was thinking I was going to bring it up to you. What about the Yankees saying, look, we love you. We want you to be here for a long time. Why don't we do it 3 years at a time where you're always the highest paid player in the game?
Yeah,
so
I mean,
3 years at 180 or you know, 175 or something, and then we go from there.
Yeah, I think 3 years is a little short. I know he's building on himself, buying, you know, he's betting on himself. But, I mean, anything can happen. I can't imagine anyone turning down a $600 million contract to sign 180 knowing that an injury could wipe all that money away. Like it's just, I think you're more likely to get a long-term deal with opt-outs every 3 years. And sorry, Dan, you got a little loud there. I think you're more likely to have a long-term deal with opt-outs. I could see a 5 or 6 year deal making big-time money where you're still getting, you know, 250 300 million, something like that, over 6 years. I could see that and then hitting free agency at 31, 32. But even that, I would think you're going to get a long-term deal with opt-outs after every couple of years or having multiple opt-outs. I don't know how that works. Typically, it's usually one opt-out, but maybe they could put multiple opt-outs into the deal where every 4 years he has an opt-out clause. Because I just don't, when I'm a, because part of free agent is also being free. And the idea of locking in to a guaranteed 15 years that you know you're going to be with this team for 15 years, I mean, that's a long-term commitment. And some guys might want the opportunity to say, hey, look, things could change in 15 years. I might not like it here. I might not like the manager who everybody loves, or I might get fed up with this or fed up with that, and I want to go somewhere else. Or I don't know. But, again, even Scott Boras, I understand he hired Scott Boras. You know why he hired Scott Boras? Because he's a super agent and he gets people what they want. There's still a chance he wants the New York Yankees. That's all. Like I'm not even saying he's going to be a Yankee. I'm not even going that far on the limb. Like, you guys are all crazy. He's going to be a Yankee. There's no way he's leaving. I'm not saying that. There's a very good chance he leaves. But now every story is just, well, listen, it's going to be a bidding war. The Yankees won't win it. See ya. Like that, like as if that's what's going to happen. Jerry in Mattawan. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, Chris. Listen, I heard you earlier in the show. I've been a Yankee fan all my life. Why can't we just move on? Let's look forward to the World Series. All these guys counting Soto's money. I really don't care.
I agree with you.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, let's watch a good World Series, be happy that we're there after, you know, God knows how long. You know,
15 years.
You know, my opinion, your opinion, the six guys who just had on the phone's opinion about Soto isn't going to matter.
Of course not.
It's not going to matter. I mean, it's good fodder.
Well, I mean, to be fair, my opinion of the World Series isn't going to matter either. So, I mean...
I understand, but it's conversation about the actual event that's going on.
I understand.
We can't forecast the future as far as what this man wants to do.
No, I
agree. God bless him. He's a superstar. And, you know, you always put on a good show. I like listening to you. But get back on track with these idiots on the phone, and let's talk about the World Series.
No, I mean, listen, I want to talk about the World Series. Here's the thing. We do have a couple of days, and it's a story. I can't ignore the idea that all these guys are writing stories. People want to talk about it. And I'll be totally honest with you. I mentioned Juan Soto. I got four calls on it. People want to discuss this contract. I agree with you. I agree with you. I'm more focused on the World Series and what he can do in the World Series, and I love his matchup. They have one lefty in the bullpen. That's it. They have one lefty on the entire staff. I think you could say Juan Soto in the World Series against the Dodgers, I think there's a great chance he has a monster World Series. My prediction is if the Yankees win, I'll give you my prediction for the series as we get closer. I'm still going with Judge. Judge will be the World Series MVP if the Yankees win. I firmly believe that. I think Judge is about to go off. I think the middle of that lineup is about to go off. Let's hope. Let's go to Val in the Bronx real quick. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, what's going on, man? I got a few things. You got time?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. What's up?
All right. Real quick. You know, I want to talk about my Yanks, but like you just said with that Soto thing, real quick, I agree with you so much. I actually remember a time, I think it was Selig that was still commissioner back then, when we actually got scolded for discussing while the World Series was going on and we weren't playing in it. There was talk about, I think, A-Rod and Cashman. There was an extension that went on. And
yeah, he opted out during the World Series and everything. Yeah, that was 2007.
Right, and all that stuff like that. And A-Rod and the Yankees, to some extent, actually got scolded for disrespecting the World Series by discussing information or discussing business like that before the winter meeting. So, you know, you're perfectly correct when you talk about the guys in the media who are talking about it and making it a story now with all this Soto money and all that stuff like that. And actually, honestly, I'm right alongside you because I think it's somewhere around 600 to 650, but I don't even want to get into that because that's not the topic at hand.
Right.
The previous caller's perspective is perfectly correct. I'd like to get into not two things, but
just go ahead.
One thing and then a little expanded. The Nesta thing that you talked about, I heard the soundbite from Boone earlier in the evening, and I kept saying to myself, why does he sound so hesitant with the way he's talking about Nesta? And then when y'all played the soundbite from Nesta himself, it made perfect sense and gave context to why he was kind of, in my mind or in my view, because I thought I was being a little bit paranoid, but he almost was like trying not to go as close as he could without actually committing to the idea that he was putting him back on the roster.
Yeah.
So now that's some context to it. And the next thing I'd like to get into, you know, I was thinking about it, and it feels like I kind of alluded a little bit to it last night yesterday morning when we talked. But I, the more I think about it, it feels like an old Sega martial arts game. And you made it to the top level. You're about to break the game. And as you open the door to get into that chamber, the opponent that you're facing is actually you. I think there's so many similarities in the way even that we built our teams that it's like I was trying to say yesterday. It's like a clash of titans. The one thing some of the few things I will say is that we've got to the few advantages that we have. And I want to believe, like you said, there is that perceived advantage with our starting rotation and with our bullpen. Those things have to hold true. Like, you can't miss on that because that's what's going to give us the difference to allow, like I said, us to win that slugfest if it comes down to it. I want to believe also, too, that hopefully Jazz is going to have a chance to actually come through. And I am so on point with what you said because I really think I've been saying it all the time. You know, and I feel like them two that he gave us in this last series was something to it. It's he's getting too many opportunities to change that narrative, man. He's got to be. It's got to happen that he's going to be the World Series MVP. I totally agree with you. I think it's Judge's to take.
Yeah, I mean, I like Judge in this series. And, yeah, I mean, listen, Jazz, it would be nice if you can get something out of Jazz. There's no doubt. And, again, it's going to be an interesting decision because they haven't had, like, Wells has struggled, and they did give Trevino a start, but There's not going to be any lefties. Wells is going to play in almost any game, every game of this series. I don't think there's any doubt. There are guys you move in the lineup. There are guys you don't touch in the lineup. And Jazz isn't, you know, Jazz isn't one of them. Jazz is someone who could be taken out if he struggles. They have Oswaldo Cabrera. They have John Birdie. And those guys have played well at times in this postseason. So, but they haven't been behind. They've been leading these series. They have never gotten to a point where they need offense. They've never gotten to the point where they're up against their backs are up against the wall. So Jazz has been able to play, and you know, he's been good defensively, hasn't really made any mistakes defensively, and they've been able to live with his lack of offense. But if it gets to a point where they can't, like he's not, you know, if Judge doesn't hit, Judge plays, doesn't matter. Judge can go 0 for whatever. He's hitting third every single game. They're not going to move that. They're not going to change that. That's what it is. Stanton, same thing. Obviously, Soto, same thing. Glaber, same thing. Like, there are guys who you just aren't going to take out of the lineup. Jazz is a guy where if he struggles, if his struggles continue and he has bad at-bats, then, yeah, he's a guy you could pull. The only thing is I feel good about him in this series a little bit. There's going to be no lefties. I know that's not the be-all, end-all, and he certainly struggled against right-handed pitching in this postseason, but I just have a feeling he's going to come through. I don't know. I have a good feeling about this Yankee lineup, to be honest with you. I do. I've been saying it. They've been putting guys on. They've been having good at-bats. They've just been one, even though they've had heroic home runs in the last couple of games, they've been like the one big hit away from breaking open a game. And if they just continue to put themselves in the position to do it, and just bases loaded, nobody out, they get the one or two runs. They don't get the big double in the alley and three, four runs. They haven't done that. I think you could see that in the World Series. And if they get that, and if Judge gets hot, I mean, they're as good as, they're right there with the Dodgers. This is a coin flip World Series. It's going to be a good one.